Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. Thanks for joining us this morning. Today in the studio for the full hour, we're joined by U.S. Senator Tom Udall. We're going to be talking about a couple different topics today, and we'll also be taking your calls on these topics. And I'd like to start off first talking about the economy and efforts to create jobs and recover from the recession. And let's get some calls lined up. If you have questions for Senator Udall, the number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. And we're going to do our best to look for your emails also this morning. And that email address is callinshow@kunm.org. Good morning, Senator. Thanks so much for joining me this
Good
morning.
Good morning, Elaine. Great to be with you this morning.
I want to start off in a statement last week. You said that you did not agree with some parts of President Obama's budget request. And I'm interested in kind of what specifically you differed on with him on that budget request as we kind of start our conversation about the economy this morning.
Well, the overall budget, I think, is one that's targeted towards dealing with the deficits and dealing with the national debt. But many times when you look at a national budget that a president proposes, it may impact New Mexico in such a way that there are things that we would push for that would be different than he's presented in his budget. And a good example there is Los Alamos. You know, this is one of the premier national security labs. I think they do excellent work up there. They're a real national treasure. There was a big commitment to move forward with many of the things that were pushed by both Republicans and Democrats, and now there's kind of a change. And we're not going to get everything we want, but we'll have a good debate, and we'll try to stay focused on what's really important to our national security and then some of the other really important things they do up there. But that's a good example. But as we move through the process, we will be looking very carefully to make sure that New Mexico is protected. I mean, one of the things they always say is the president proposes and Congress disposes, and that's really the reality of the budget. The president's budget is a start, and then we work through the process.
So Los Alamos National Lab announced this week plans to cut around 10% of the lab's full-time permanent staff. That represents 400 to 800 full-time job positions that they're looking at. First, arranging for voluntary layoffs and then trying to avoid forced layoffs of staff up there. And then last week, we had the announcement of the delay of the new nuclear facility, the Chemical and Metallurgy Research Replacement Facility. Former Congresswoman Heather Wilson, who is now running for the GOP nomination for your colleague Jeff Bingaman's Senate seat, she called this cut of the or delay on the project and cut of funding to LANL something that President Obama had gone back on a promise, I think. That might not have been her exact words. But do you see it the same way as him having promised something to New Mexico and to the lab facilities in New Mexico that he's now turning around and not providing?
Well, I think we're in a much different situation than we were a couple of years ago. You know, when we passed the START treaty, we took a look at many of the things that should be funded, and now we realize that we have a severe national debt. We have deficits that are over $1 trillion. You know, we've never seen deficits like this in the history of our country, and so all of us have to ask ourselves in a responsible way where we're going to cut, and then we're going to have to realize that a state like New Mexico with substantial federal expenditures is going to take some hits. I just don't think there's any doubt about that. But I don't think I would characterize it as you just did.
As a broken promise.
Yeah, I don't think I would.
What other things would you have liked to see or are you going to plan to work for New Mexico in the budget?
Well, one of the things that we could do that the president has been talking about, and I think many of us in the New Mexico delegation have been talking about, we could do an infrastructure program that would be a jobs program to get people back to work. You know, 30% of the people that do construction in New Mexico are out of work. And if we started refurbishing our schools and building roads and bridges and taking a look at the things that have run down over time or need to be renovated, we could put a lot of those people back to work. And unfortunately, in the Senate, we've brought many of these proposals forward, and we've been just facing a filibuster. People are unwilling to work with us on that, and that's something that's just very unfortunate and disappointing to me. But if we want to move forward, that's one of the ways to do it. We finally have in place, and I think this is very important, this payroll tax cut, which probably means about $1,000 in a family's family of four's
annually,
pocket,
right.
and unemployment insurance, which also is something that's important for the really vulnerable families in New Mexico. You know, if you lose your job and through no fault of your own, and you still have to support your family, unemployment is something that's very important. We've always had that in place, and I think we should do that also.
What's your opinion about the source of the resistance to these types of initiatives in the Senate, the reason why Democrats are experiencing so many filibusters?
Yeah, the sad thing is, and, you know, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, announced right after the last election, he said, my number one objective is going to be that President Obama should be defeated. And so his objective is to make sure that the president doesn't have accomplishments. And so he's made it very, very painful and excruciating and incredibly slow. And he's done this with filibusters and with delay in almost every way under the rules. And so it's clear to me that there has really been a strategy to say we're not going to allow the party of the president to move forward with these things, even though they're good, solid proposals that have had bipartisan support in the past. And I just find that very unfortunate. Now, they've run into real resistance from citizens. We saw that happen with the payroll tax cut, which is a temporary measure. We should realize that, you know, we don't want to be draining Social Security over the long term. All of those monies have been replaced. But this is a measure to help working families and put a little bit extra money in the budget for a particular budget cycle.
We're taking your calls this morning for U.S. Senator Tom Udall, Democrat of New Mexico. The local number to call here in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. If you have a question about the economy, about creating jobs, about lawmakers' initiatives to help the U.S. economy recover from the recession, now's the time to call. We'll touch on conservation issues a little bit later in the hour, and then we'll also go to a conversation about campaign finances. But right now we're talking about the economy. Let's go to Bill in Los Lunas. Good morning, Bill. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Representative.
Good morning, Bill. How are you doing this morning?
Just fine, sir.
Good, good.
Los Alamos Oil and Gas, they all are under private contract by private companies to be run. But yet they cannot handle the job without subsidies from the government. What's wrong with that? Another issue is this governor gives high-level state jobs to out-of-staters, and New Mexico longtime residents fail to get those jobs. This is what's wrong in New Mexico, sir. And yet the Republicans want to limit the people's government. I don't understand, sir, when they're all asking for subsidies. Thank you, sir.
Bill, thank you very much. And let me start with your last issue. I think it is very important for New Mexico to focus on looking for New Mexicans first when we're trying to find people to work. And I know that we put that in a requirement many times when companies come in from outside the state. Intel, for example, which is one of our largest employers, made a commitment to New Mexico that it would do everything that it could to try to hire New Mexico workers. And I think they actually have a target percentage that they work towards. And they've been very good at that. And so I think you express a sympathy that a lot of people feel in New Mexico, and I know I feel it, that we should try to work with folks in New Mexico, many of whom come from very modest circumstances and really would like a shot at getting a job at a company here or state government job whatever it is. As far as subsidies, I'm not quite sure what you were talking about there, but it's clear that, New Mexico gets a lot of federal money. And many of us that, have been either elected to state office and now I'm in federal office, we realize that reality. We try to make sure that, the money's well spent and that it's targeted into areas that are very important. We're going to talk about some of those areas later when it comes to our national parks and developing our watersheds, making sure that we have good, solid projects there. So thank you, Bill, for your question.
I'd like to take an email question here that we received this morning from Mark Dunham, and it's kind of an extensive email. I'm not going to read the entire thing, Mark, but I'm going to pull some of your points out and then get to your question. He's writing about the Department of Energy's large presence in New Mexico and the history of management of the labs in New Mexico. And he says, in fact, over time, the U.S. government, he says, must take responsibility for operations at, its nuclear facilities and to not participate in a culture of blame that the contractor control of DOE. And he says that the experiment, this is from his email, with contractors controlling LANL and running LANL, that there's overspending and mindless paperwork and things like this. So his question is, he says, Senator, why must we persist with this expensive and failed experiment? Is there no reverse gear on the U.S. government vehicle? Can we remove the National Nuclear Security Administration barrier that keeps labs from participating fully in Department of Energy Office of Science work?
Well, he has a couple of questions
There's
here, Elaine, as
there,
you know,
so.
And that are embedded. And let me try to address a couple of them. Of course, and I think there have been recent letters to the editor on this out of Los Alamos about some of the paperwork and things. And clearly, I believe the administration, the director, and others that have come in recently are really trying to make sure that that's kept to a minimum. And this is something that I think everybody addresses in a business and government. You know, how do we continuously improve? I mean, if they, Elaine, presented you in order to take a vacation, a bunch of paperwork, I mean, you'd obviously advocate and say, you know, we can do this with less. So we need to focus on that, and that's an important concern. One of the things Mark's raised is the levels of oversight within the government. And when we put in the NNSA, we put in a whole new level of oversight, and that was done over the national security labs. And remarkably, for decades, we had run without that. And there are many that have advocated that we should reform that agency, we should take look at different ways of doing that. I mean, what I'm really open to is we should take a look now that we've had a good long experience with the NNSA and see are there better efficiencies and things to do.
Well, and there are critics of that agency that would say that agency is driven very deeply by the needs of the corporations that are doing things like developing the plan for the CMRR at LANL, for example, and that doesn't – there are people who argue that doesn't serve New Mexicans. And so that relationship between the contractors and the government agencies that oversee them has, as you said, been criticized very deeply.
And one of the things that's coming up, I mean, what we do is we rebid these contracts, and we're going to put out an RFP very soon from the Department of Energy to deal with the management of Sandia National Laboratory. And that it's going to be very important to follow that RFP closely. We want to hear public comment. We want to take a look at what are the management successes we've had in the past, what are the failures, and make sure that we put in place a request for proposals that will move us forward to better management. But it clearly, when you have, I mean, I think this year in the president's budget, $4.4 billion for these two laboratories. That's almost as big as the state budget, and we're talking about thousands of employees and a huge amount of money. So there are better ways to take a good hard look at things, and I think we all ought to be aware of that in whatever area we work in.
U.S. Senator Tom Udall is in the studio with us today for the KUNM call-in show. Let's take another caller, Carol in Albuquerque. Good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning, and thank you very much, Senator Udall, for your work on our behalf. My question involves the issue of jobs going overseas. I recently learned that CenturyLink, which took over our phone service here, has a contract with the Philippines for Filipino call center people. And I want to know if these companies are getting tax breaks for sending jobs overseas, and if so, what can we do to reverse that?
Carol, thank you for that question. And in this particular case that you've raised, I'm not sure whether they get a tax break or not, but I do know that within our tax code, and I've supported a number of bills and voted on pieces of legislation that eliminate the kinds of things that encourage a business in the United States to close down and move overseas. We actually help them do that right now. It makes no sense to me, but we actually help businesses do that. So we should be focused at this particular time when we're talking about growing jobs in America on things that move jobs overseas. And I would like to see major reform in that area and make sure that we don't continue to do that.
Let's take another call. James in Sandia Park. Good morning, James. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah. I want to ask Mr. Udall about the E-rate program. I know it's up for approval with Congress, I believe, this session. And, speaking of creating jobs and bringing high-tech jobs into the state, that program does a lot. I'd like to get his thoughts on that.
James, tell me a little bit about the E-rate program.
What's the program you're talking about?
Yeah. Well, it's congressionally approved. It's funded through a small tax on everybody's phone bill that actually goes to USAC, which is a federally managed joint venture between the telecom companies and the federal government. And it provides internet access, phone service, and all of the infrastructure within schools and libraries, particularly rural schools and libraries, based on their free and reduced lunch percentage. And the source of my job, and it's up for approval this year. It's been in place. This is year 15 of a 15-year program, and there's a lot of companies that rely on that business, frankly, and there's a lot of schools that rely on that funding as well. So,
yeah. Thank you very much, James. And I think it was important for you to kind of explain for all of our listeners what the program's about so we're all on the same wavelength. But this is a very important program. It's up for reauthorization. I believe that reauthorization is going to be in the Commerce Committee, where I'm a member. And usually what we do is have a series of hearings, try to look at what's working and what isn't. In this particular case, I think there are a lot of success stories, and you've hit them, especially for rural areas. I mean, this is something that we need to keep the people in rural areas interconnected. It reminds me when we talk about broadband for everybody in America, that's what we did with electricity. That's what we did with the railroads. We need to stay interconnected because we're a better country for it, and we do, I think, a much better job in terms of how we produce goods and services if we're interconnected like that. And we bring in these people that are living in rural areas that really like their rural lifestyle.
We're talking with U.S. Senator Tom Udall. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with your calls.
Summer Prep offers more than 90 academic outdoor arts and sports classes for K-12, including mathematics, theater, rock climbing, soccer, and all-day camps for young children. Visit sandiaprep.org. This message sponsored by Sandia Prep School, a tax-exempt organization.
Support comes from Saggio's, homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts, serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. It's about 23 minutes past 8 o'clock. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and U.S. Senator Tom Udall, Democrat of New Mexico, has joined us in the studio this morning for the full hour, and we've been taking your questions on the topic of the economy and job creation. Got one more call this morning from Jason in Cuba. Good morning, Jason. You're on the air.
Hello, Mr. Udall.
Good Good morning, Jason. How are you this morning?
Back in 2003, I did 2 years in Iraq, came back, did 6 years with a bachelor's degree, and then I did a master's degree. Still unable to find specialized work within the state of New Mexico. What kind of steps are being taken so that people with degrees have more access to the jobs that they should be doing rather than working at Home Depot?
Jason, first of all, let me thank you for your service to our country. Your 2 years in Iraq is something I think all of us owe you a debt of gratitude. And I've traveled to Iraq and Afghanistan and met many of the people on the ground. They're just very, very impressive young people. And I assume you got your education through the GI Bill, which I'm very proud to have been in the Congress and been able to vote for that, an updated GI Bill. So we tried to give the exact benefits that folks had coming back from World War II. But one of the bills that we've worked on recently and put into law is called Vow to Hire Heroes Act. And this is a piece of legislation which tries to transition folks back to civilian life and gives tax credits for people working. If you don't know about that, and what's available there, you could contact my office, and we could help walk you through that. We've done a lot of things in terms of veterans starting businesses. We're trying to help with many, many areas when it comes to the veterans. And I really applaud you for going out, getting a couple of degrees, and wanting to work. And that's part of the reason we need to have a big push to do better on job creation.
We're speaking with U.S. Senator Tom Udall, and we're taking your questions this morning. I'd like to shift to a conversation about conservation and the environment at this point. So if you have questions for the senator, things like, are there enough public lands protected from industry and human use in New Mexico? Would you like to see more lands protected? Would you like to see different activities on the part of the government when it comes to conservation of water and air and land? The number to call locally here in Albuquerque is 277-586. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. Senator, we had one of the most severe droughts in state history last year, in addition to catastrophic wildfires. In your mind, what are the most pressing conservation issues for New Mexico right now?
Well, you mentioned one right off the top, and that's the drought. And I don't think we deal with droughts in such a good way. We don't plan. We don't have the resources available. We aren't as flexible. And this hits different parts of the state in different ways. Some areas we have grass fires, like down in the south. Other areas we have forest fires. We need to really push the whole idea of getting our forests healthy and getting them thinned. There's a real opportunity there, I think, for jobs, once again, with the biomass that's in the forests and work with the contracts and work with private industry on that. But I think that's a big one. And one of the things that I don't think people realize is that when we talk about climate change and global warming, the Southwest and the Rocky Mountain states will end up being hit twice as hard as the rest of the country. It's expected to be in temperature double what is going to be in other areas. And so that could impact us in terms of making our weather much more like about 300 miles to the south. And so we need to be thinking about that and the things that we do in state government, local government, federal government. And one of the things I've been working on is what's called a renewable electricity standard, trying to push us towards renewable energy. New Mexico has the opportunity to be a great leader here and already is a model for the rest of the country in solar, wind, biomass, biofuels.
This is where utilities are required to produce a certain amount of their energy from renewable sources, right? And
absolutely,
we do have a state standard already, and that is, even that is contentious right now with utilities in New Mexico and the costs of implementing those plans, those renewable energy standards here in New Mexico under the state standards. So
but how
do you see overcoming that bump of heads between the industry and shareholders of people like who own stock in PNM, for example, and people in New Mexico who want to see higher renewable energy standards?
Yeah, we should keep up the dialogue with PNM, and but I think this is a real win-win for everybody in New Mexico. We've seen public service company, when our first standard was put in for 10%, Public Service Company of New Mexico met that early. And then we were able to put in this additional standard, which I think is 20% by 2020. This has massive public support. I mean, the polling I've seen is in the 70s and 80s. Look at the resources we have. We have wind resources. We have solar resources. If we just had the grid put together, we could be a great exporter of energy, like we export energy now in terms of the fossil fuels.
Let's take another call. Glenn in Jemez Springs. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks, Senator, for joining us here. I live in Jemez Springs. I'm sure you've been up here since you're concerned about the Valles Caldera, and you're mentioning the drought. Maybe you have been here for our great fireworks that we have, where we take an entire day to soak down the little hill where they set off the fireworks, thanks to the American Legion up here. I was just so discouraged to hear that a corporation committee in Santa Fe had the fireworks lobbyists get to them, and they did not allow this topic of the governor having authority to shut down fireworks for the state. Is there anything you, Senator Bingham, and the representatives can do to allow for the governor or for some governmental entity to shut down fireworks so we don't burn up our state? I mean, this was really bad. If people haven't seen it, come on up and look at the remains of a serious fire. And I'll take your answer off here. Thanks so much.
Glenn, thank you very much. And you're absolutely right. Fireworks and the time that we usually do fireworks around the 4th of July is usually the peak of fire season. And I think it's probably fair to say that we need to give various individuals the ability to move very aggressively depending on what the climate is. Some people already have that authority. I think for the most part, this is probably more of a state issue than a federal issue. And I feel pretty comfortable so far that we're moving in the right direction on it, meaning that people are pushing for more authority and being able to react when we have a tough situation and where we need decisions made very quickly. But you're right. I toured the fire situation up in your area. It's been absolutely devastating. The Dixon apple farm was just – apple orchards were saved by the fire, but then the floods got them, which is probably worse than the fire many times is the floods, because it burns everything, and then when the rains come, the sediment comes down and gets over all living things. It's pretty devastating.
Let's take another call. Judy in Albuquerque. Good morning, Judy. You're on the air.
Good morning, and thank you so much for this program. My concern that I'm calling about is the mixed waste landfill and the jet fuel that are seeping into our aquifer, and the jet fuel is already in it. And there was, I think it was $5 million allocated that hasn't been spent for cleanup. And that's my concern.
This is at Kirtland, I believe.
Okay, yeah. That's what you're talking about, Judy, I believe, is what Elaine said. I've toured the site out there. This is a very serious issue. Senator Bingham, I believe Congressman Lujan and myself, we all got together with the Air Force Chief of Staff. We had him outline for us the plan. One of the things that I was impressed by is the Air Force came up with a very aggressive plan. They went to the State Environment Department. They've gotten approval, and they're moving very quickly to try to get this contained. But when you get pollution in groundwater and of the kinds of fuels that you have there, It's a very difficult thing that takes many, many years, and they're going to be doing a lot of pumping and filtering. And I was in one of the neighborhoods where they were drilling right in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and there's some real inconveniences going on to people there. But we're going to keep monitoring this, stay on top of it, and make sure the concerns you have are met.
You know, efforts by lawmakers in recent years have been made to defund agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency, and I'm wondering what the tenor is of this type of conversation in Washington right now.
I don't think people realize that having the laws on the books that the EPA administers, clean air, clean water, toxic waste, that these are things that are under threat. Elaine, those of you that cover this, and those of us that are in Washington seeing this every day, we've come very close in many cases to having some of those rolled back. We've actually had many proposals pass through the House of Representatives in the last year and a half that would roll back the progress we've made on clean air, clean water, toxics, and I find this very disturbing. And I think the more the word gets out there, the more people will realize that these folks in the House that are voting for these things are out of touch and get involved in our democracy and try to reverse this. But we've been lucky so far, but we need citizens involved at every stage.
I've got an email question from Colin Lincoln, and he has a question about kind of the rhetoric around thinning and logging in restorative forestry techniques. And his comment is about how thinning may produce marketable products while restoring a healthy balance in forests. This is from his email. And he wants to know about putting dollars towards thinning and how that can be distinguished from logging. And forgive me, Colin, if I haven't gotten your whole comment in. In the interest of time, I'm trying to paraphrase a little bit for the senator.
Colin, I think you've made a good point here. I mean, the first thing you have to realize is that you don't just go in and cut down forests, clear-cut forests. We've had fire suppression for 100 years. There's been overgrowth in the forest. We've had several very good forest institutes in the Southwest, one at Highlands, one at Northern Arizona University, one up in Colorado. And they are studying exactly what we mean when we say a healthy forest, how to restore it. And so we're trying to put in place their very good ideas and put in standards in place so that we have healthy forests and you can have regular burns. I mean, the thing people don't realize is that in a forest, if you have a regular burn like used to happen 100 years ago, you can prevent catastrophic forest fires, the ones we're getting now, which are very difficult to fight and burn so hot, they just destroy the whole ecosystem.
Let's take another call. Doug in Taos. Good morning, Doug. You're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you, Senator Udall. I want to thank you for your work with the Citizens United effort to overturn that unfortunate ruling and the measure that you've introduced into the Senate. I also wanted to ask your support if you would consider... I work with a campaign, a coalition, which is trying to protect the Columbine Hondo Wilderness Study Area, and we would like to see that made part of the wilderness system and permanently protected. It's an extraordinary 46,000-acre tract that sits right on the divide between the road that goes up to Taos Ski Valley and the Rio Hondo and the Red River, the road that goes up to Red River. It includes 3 12,000-foot summits and just extraordinary wildlife, high alpine, and two major watersheds into the Rio Hondo and into the Red River, which both contribute to the upper Rio Grande. And we think this is just pristine, beautiful land, and they're not making land like that anymore. It does face possible development pressure over time. And I hope that you support this initiative, and I know it's a difficult situation in the Senate and in the Congress, but if there's any way to move something like this forward, I'd really appreciate your support.
Well, we would like to work very closely with you on that. I know that there some controversy, but many times we can work through those kinds of issues. On the campaign finance issue that you mentioned, I was heartened to see that the New Mexico legislature passed two memorials dealing with Citizens United and really expressing the outrage that the Supreme Court would roll back the kinds of laws that have been put in place over 100 years to get money out of the system, put limits on the money, be more transparent. And I think we're moving in the direction of putting a constitutional amendment out there that's strong. It already has 22 sponsors.
Senator Tom Udall has joined us in the studio this morning to talk about various issues. I want to return to this conversation about Citizens United and campaign finance, but first I want to take a quick question. It kind of takes us back a little bit to our economy conversation, but we have Charlie from Los Alamos, and I wanted to get Charlie in real quick before we change topics. Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning, Senator.
Hi.
Good morning,
Senator.
How are you doing?
Los Alamos has a large scientific research staff, but unlike other national labs, there's no advanced degree granting institution that's tightly coupled right next to it. So that seems like it's missing a great synergy in cost savings and agility to be able to draw on a student body, to use that scientific staff to augment professors and to investigate technologies that are too expensive for the lab to do with its cost structure. It seems like because of those cost savings, that it makes it something that the federal government might actually be interested in promoting in within New Mexico. And I wonder if there's any movement towards something like that.
The University of California is still involved with the Los Alamos. They're one of the partners in the Los Alamos management. But I assume that you feel that they're too far off, and I think you make a good point there. I always think when we come up with these for reauthorization or the reawarding of the contract, that we need to take a look at those kinds of issues and see if New Mexico's universities can play a role with both Los Alamos and Sandia. So I look forward to working with you on that, and I think you've raised a very important issue.
Are there any plans, Senator, to look at ways of transforming Los Alamos National Labs into a government lab that's not subject to a profit motive? That's a question from an email listener.
There have been a couple of national studies recently that have talked about diversifying the mission. This is something that I've talked about for a long time. I know several other members of the delegation have mentioned it. Senator Domenici, I think just before he went out of office, said the same thing. We should realize that we do work right now at Los Alamos on energy, on forest fires, on climate change, and on infectious diseases, and we've made some real contributions to the national dialogue and actually have introduced techniques and science into areas that I think most people don't know about. But as we move down the road and as we look at the funding, I think we're going to realize that our national laboratories are such a treasure, we need to try to expand many of these areas.
We're speaking with Senator Tom Udall. He's a Democrat representing New Mexico in Congress. And we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. And we're going to continue our conversation this morning and talk about campaign finance issues and the Citizens United Supreme Court decision and what the senator has been doing around that issue. Do you believe that the influence of money in politics is a problem? Or do you think our elections and campaign finance system works just fine the way it is working now? We'll take your calls. If you do get a busy signal, please do keep trying to call back. We do have full lines at this moment, and so as soon as we get back from the break, we'll be taking your calls. This is the KUNM Call-In Show.
New Mexico Philharmonic presents Victor Yampolsky conducting Bartok's Viola Concerto with Kimberly Friedenberg on viola at Popejoy Hall on Saturday, February 25th at 6 p.m. The program includes Beethoven's Fidelio Overture and Johannes Brahms' Symphony No. 2 in D Major, Opus 73. Come enjoy an evening of superlative music and great artistry. For tickets and information, visit nmphil.org. That's nmphil.org. A message from the tax-exempt New Mexico Philharmonic.
Why stall? If you're frustrated with the old clunker, de-stress your life today. Call 888-KUNM-CAR and out comes a tow truck, away she goes, and very soon you receive a tax deduction and a KUNM membership. Instead of stress, you'll get relaxation, inspiration, and a wealth of information coming through your radio from KUNM. And that old car or truck will help to make it all possible. So no stalling. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-KUNM-CAR.
I'm Elaine Baumgartel. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. Senator Tom Udall has joined me in the studio this morning to take your calls and discuss various topics. We've talked about the economy a bit at the beginning of the hour, and we were just talking about conservation issues. We will be posting a podcast of this show on our website, KUNM.org, just pretty soon after the show in case you missed those segments. But right now I want to turn to the issue of campaign financing. You have proposed a constitutional amendment that would basically change the world of campaign finance in the U.S. It opposes the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United case that freed corporations from campaign contribution limits. Why isn't this kind of speech, contributions from corporations, something that should be protected under the First Amendment?
I think the court completely misread the law. I think they misread the Constitution. When they ruled in 1976, the Citizens United, let's remember, is just an extension of the ruling of Buckley versus Valeo that said money is speech and vice versa, which I think is a misguided decision. Basically, if you agree with that, you're saying the person that has the biggest checkbook is the one that gets the most say, and you forget that our elections are about a marketplace of ideas. Who has the best ideas? And that's what we really strive for in America, is who has the best ideas. The candidates are supposed to articulate the ideas. The citizens participate with them, and then they vote for the one who they believe will do the most good in terms of their lives in the country.
But doesn't talking about a marketplace of ideas set up this conversation about who's got the money to market their ideas in a marketplace of ideas? Because that ultimately is what we're talking about, right?
That's right.
The money to market your ideas or the ideas of a candidate that you support.
But any system in the world, and you look at democracies around the world, they put limits on various ways to do that. And the first thing they do is require transparency. We've now gone to a system endorsed by the Supreme Court that has no transparency. You have super PACs that are spending money on television, and 40% of that money is not identified as to who is the donor. And so group can come in with millions of dollars, call itself responsible citizens for the environment, although it may be backed by the worst polluters and that kind of situation, and make an argument that citizens don't know where that's coming from. They put an ad on the air and say, oh, this all sounds very logical. So transparency is a key, and that's what we've done in many of our laws, is enforce that kind of transparency and make it self-evident.
Let's go to David in Albuquerque. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I've spoken to you before. I don't want to sound too harsh to you because I know you believe in what I'm talking about, but I'm holding all of our politicians accountable. I just spent the last 30 days in Santa Fe making sure that every one of those people up there knew who I was and what I was about. And I want to ask this question again. Before you leave the topic that you had, you're absolutely right. Money is not speech, and there's no argument whatsoever to defend it, and anybody wants to debate me on it, have at it. But going on to what I'm interested in, there's three branches of government. We only have two branches right now because one of them doesn't work. Do you know which one it is?
No, tell me.
It's the judiciary. It does not work in many different ways, and specifically in one way, independent judges, meaning one person at a time, one judge at a time, is ignoring law that is written. They're ignoring their own court rules. They're ignoring New Mexico statute. They're ignoring U.S. code. They're ignoring the U.S. Constitution. They're also ignoring world treaties on human rights. And there's nobody to hold them accountable but another judge. Now, when you have to have one judge to hold another judge accountable, you can see how that doesn't work. Judicial Standards Commission in this state at this point does not work. It can work. And what I'd like to know from you, and you have been supportive in the past, and I've communicated with you via email, and you've been supported, but we need some specific things that we're going to do, and I'm writing legislation myself, and I have a commitment from Cisco McSorley, who is the Children's Code Specialist in the New Mexico Senate Judiciary Committee. I have his commitment to work with me starting in April of this year. But the Children's Code needs to be revamped in some ways, because you're in this state and everywhere else in the United States and the world, because I'm in communication with these people on the Internet, children are being trafficked. And I mean literally trafficked by judges. They're sending children to where the money is coming from. In short, I don't want to take up your whole program, but what?
Yeah, I want to get to a few more callers, David, so maybe if you can wrap up your comment, and if you have a question, if you could state that succinctly so we could move on.
That is the end of the comment. I'm ready for the response. I want to stay on the air for the response. I won't say anything else, but what is going to be done about the fact that the judiciary does not work because they don't follow the law?
David, thank you for your comment. First, let me say it's an extraordinary individual that will go to the New Mexico legislature and spend 30 days and lobby and advocate. And so I really appreciate you doing that. And I would tell other citizens, stay engaged with it. If you can't go, stay in touch with your representatives as you hear what's coming out or what's being considered in the legislature. I happen to believe that we have one of the best judicial systems. We may disagree on this a little bit. The thing that's corrupting the judicial system is the campaign finance and the amount of money in it. We see, not in New Mexico, but in many other states, big special interests, powerful interests moving in and spending substantial sums of money and kind of buying judicial races. The federal judiciary is insulated from that because they are lifetime appointments, and that's worked very well, and we have ways of disciplining people that go aside. But that is the role of the judiciary, to interpret the law as it's written, to look at the various things that you saw happening, consider the legislative history, but they shouldn't go beyond the law. And there's a fine balance there, and I can see where you can criticize some court rulings. I think people are on both sides of this issue. But we have a pretty good, solid judiciary compared to most other countries around the world where there's a lot more corruption.
Let's take another call. Lisa in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lisa. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for having me, and Senator Udall, I really want to thank you for all the work you're doing for us. There's so much there, but I think one of the things that has been frustrating for me is to see how the Republican Party in particular has used the filibuster as a stall tactic repeatedly over the last couple of years, and they're doing it without even having to make a single speech. I realize that the Senate sets up their rules and how they want to do things, but I think when you look at what's going on and you see that somebody can just push the filibuster button without doing any work for it, and I don't think that a lot of these guys who are filibustering have the moral fortitude to spend the money to get their speech writers to write the speeches that they're going to have to stand there and present. And I think if people were to hold the line and make them do that, they wouldn't filibuster nearly so much. You know, we need the legislation that the president has been trying to push through. There are too many Americans who are doing without, while other Americans have so much that they could live for another 400, 500 years, and all their kids and them would still be fine. And I think we need to change that.
Thanks, Lisa. You know, Senator, you've been very active around this issue of Senate rules and filibusters. Maybe you can briefly explain your work in that area, and then we have a few more calls I want to get to before the end of the show.
Lisa, you're absolutely right. The proposal that I've advocated for, and we had a big debate at the beginning of the Congress a year or so ago, was what's called a talking filibuster. Exactly what you say. If you're going to delay, if you're going to stand up and slow things down and take over the entire Senate floor, you should do it talking. and not behind the scenes. And that's exactly what the reform that I was pushing would do. We're going to continue to work on that as we get into new Congresses. I believe we should, just like the House of Representatives, when we have a new Congress, we should take a look at how the rules are working, how they're not working, and make the changes. And I will be continuing to do that as we come into new Congresses in the future, especially about a year from now.
Let's take one more call. Glenn in Ponderosa. Good morning, Glenn. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thank you for the program, and thank you, Senator, for being with us this morning. Out of all of the things that have been brought up this morning, I see an underlying issue, which is the culture of decision-making. There appears to be a Band-Aid approach in Washington to provide temporary fixes for the most severe symptoms and never really addressing the causal factors or the innovative approaches or even looking at innovative approaches to solving problems. So, for instance, the proposed fix with the filibuster, it didn't happen. And I think that's more as a result of the culture there than it is the any flaws in your proposal. You mentioned that we have ways of disciplining judges, but yet we don't. Once again, it seems to be an issue of the culture. Maybe you could address that, Senator. Thank you for your time.
Well, there's no doubt, Glenn, that in Washington there's kind of an inside-the-beltway approach to things, and then there's outside-the-beltway. And many times we don't take into consideration what's happening in the rest of the country. When you talk about the filibuster, the kind of delay that we encounter every day from the Republican leadership and Mitch McConnell, which has been united in terms of slowing everything down, people don't see that. And we're trying to find ways to highlight that, to bring it to people's attention. And so there is a culture in Washington that needs to be broken. I know the president feels strongly about that. I feel strongly about that. And we're trying to break through at every point that we can.
So we're speaking with Senator Tom Udall. We're right up at the kind of at the end of the program. Thanks to all the callers who called in this morning. I wasn't able to get everybody on this morning. We'll continue to work to get comments to you that we get from our listeners, Senator. What about President Obama's reelection campaign request for supporters to contribute to a super PAC? You are fighting against the way that super PACs function in campaign finance, this lack of transparency in the way that large corporate donors can support candidates of their choice. And yet the president, the head of your party, has said, never mind, I'm not going to do what I said I was going to do, which was not support this. I'm going to go ahead and we're going to do it. Support me in this way. What has this done to your efforts? I mean, are you a little ticked about that? Or, how do you feel about that? And what does it mean for the work that you're doing?
Unfortunately, what happens in our campaign finance system is when one side does it, the other side does it. And that's the situation we find ourselves in. I think this will end up helping us, because the more of these commercials that run, the more people learn how little transparency there is, the more they're going to get mad. I mean, apparently in Iowa at one point, 40% of the commercials that were being run were these super PAC commercials that were negative. And people are disgusted by this. And then when they realize that they can't even find out who's running the ads, that's going to help the reform. It's going to help the constitutional amendment we're pushing for. It's going to help the disclosure pieces of legislation where we're requiring full disclosure. And so in a perverted kind of way, it helps, but I don't approve of it, and I don't think it's a good idea to just meet fire with fire. But you'd have to play by the rules that are out there. I mean, I don't intend to start a super PAC, and I intend to stay on these super PAC's backs to make sure that.
But if a super PAC said, "We're going to support you and your initiatives, and we're going to support your initiative to get rid of super PAC funding," what if a super PAC was created in order to do exactly that?
The people that I admire are the ones that are running races this year that are trying to design agreements between themselves to keep out the super PAC money.
Senator Tom Udall, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with us this morning. If you missed part of the program,
you can
find it online at KUNM.org. And we're all out of time this morning. This has been the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel.
Thank you, Elaine.